Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Jawanza for Life. I hope everybody had a wonderful day, and I'm so thankful that whatever you've done today and are doing, that you've taken time out to tune in to listen to another edition of Jawanza for Life. I have as my special guest again today, brother who we had on just a few days ago on New Year's Eve. We started a series, and if anybody has ever desired answers to the questions that plague many people about, you know, why are we here? What's the reason for living? You know, who am I? Why was I born? Then this is the show for you. I have as my special guest an author, a priest. He is the Paramount King of the Osara Set Society, also author of the fabulous book African Names, The Ancient Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. He's agreed to be my special guest again today, Brother Orwahehi Metura in Comet, and he's Paramount King of the Osara Set Society, and we are discussing the 11 laws of God. We're going through the 11 laws of God faculty by faculty. We're going down the tree of life, and so everybody, you are getting an opportunity and have the opportunity to call in and ask questions. If there are questions that you have that you'd like to ask of my guest, I'm in the studio with my wife, Akuia Shepsnater.
Hello, everybody.
And I would like to get to my guest immediately. Brother Orwa, thank you so much for agreeing to be my guest again today.
Excellent. Thank you for inviting us on. How's everything?
My pleasure. Oh, everything is well, brother. Again, this is such vital information that you're bringing because, again, so many people throughout life at some point or another in life have asked these questions. Why am I here? What is the purpose for life? You know, why do good things happen to bad people? You know, questions that, you know, make people just scratch their head. And oftentimes people just have not had anyone actually explain to them concretely and effectively the answers to these questions. Like, why am I here? What is the purpose of life? How do I navigate through these sometimes turbulent waters of life? And so you're here as a representative of the Osara Set Society, a priest, Paramount King of the Osara Set Society, under the guidance of Shechem Meshechem Ra'u Nefer Amen. And you have a system and teach a system that people have found to be successful to help people to navigate the waters of life. And part of that is the Tree of Life, the 11 laws of God. And last week we discussed the Amen law, the first law, the zero sphere on the Tree of Life. If you could give those who are just tuning in a brief overview of what we discussed last week as it relates to the Tree of Life, the Amen sphere.
Okay, be happy to. Well, as we were saying last week, Amen is the master principle of our lives. All of us came to earth to master this principle. And basically, the principle of Amen is what we call generically happiness. Everyone comes to earth to be happy. The problem is we've been miseducated relative to what is true happiness. We believe that we've been taught that happiness has to do with either having things or avoiding things. If I can get that new car or that woman there or that new home, or if I can stay away from that lady over there, or that boss or that man, I'll be happy. But that's not what happiness is. Happiness is an inner quality that is the essence of our being, which is what we call peace. So in the Kemetic language, the term we use is called Hetep. And Hetep means peace. So what we mean by peace is that it's our essential state. It's the state, the natural state of our being. And what do we mean by natural state of our being? We mean that all of our energies, all of our movements, all of the things that we do are all geared toward reestablishing this essential state we call peace or happiness. Now, people will say, well, you know, happiness is just another emotion. Well, there are emotions. Emotion means literally that which an energy that gives movement to something. And
okay.
The only emotion that is natural to us is that emotion we call peace. And we argue that point based on the fact that anything that's natural to us can't be harmful to us. And we know scientists have shown conclusively that all of the emotions, joy, all excessive joy, anger, worry, doubt, frustration, you name it, all of these emotions cause the body to emit cortisol or these harmful hormones, all of which are dangerous and harmful to the body. So if these things are harmful to the body, then they can't be natural to the body. So then the natural response that we should have to any challenge in life is not frustration or anger or greed or jealousy or lust or whatever, but it has to be happiness. Because happiness is the only response that doesn't hurt us.
Mm. Okay, well, if you could, because, again, just we touched on it last week a little bit, and that is the fact that oftentimes people identify with being human as opposed to being a divine being, and as a result of that identification, justify these certain harmful emotions as being natural. Naturally, I was upset that this person violated me. Naturally, I was upset that I saw my man or my woman out with somebody else. Naturally, I was jealous, you know. And just if you could briefly touch on that difference, the difference between and the effects of identifying with the human nature, quote, end quote, as opposed to the divine nature.
Well, we process experiences through our brain. And the fact of the matter is we don't have just one brain. We have several brains. And each of these brains give us a different level of evaluation of experience, a response to experience. The oldest of our brains are those which are what we call the animal brains or the reptilian and the mammalian brains. And they're called that because they are the dominant parts of brain in those creatures that we call mammals and reptiles. But they're from our evolutionary past, meaning that we have within us the same brain that we have that a snake has, we also have within us. The same brain that a lion or a bear or a cow have, we also have within us. Not that we are controlled by these brains, but they are evolutionary the oldest, and therefore they're the most established in terms of directing our response to life's challenges. And then we have the higher brain. We have a what's called the cerebrum, which is designed to give us the ability to process experiences on a higher level. And that's what we call the human brain. So the behaviors that are akin to or likened to human beings are primarily operating through one of these three brains, either the reptilian brain, the mammalian brain, or the cerebrum. But we also have, there's a new kid on the block, evolutionarily very young, called the prefrontal lobe. And it's this prefrontal lobe which is the part of the brain through which we are able to awaken and cultivate the higher parts of our being or our spirit. Now, identity goes a long ways toward what we accomplish. And what we believe, you know, people say attitude determines your altitude. What you believe you can do is going to shape the boundaries on what you accomplish or what you seek to accomplish. If you believe, as we've been taught through school, that, you know, these animal responses are natural, they are, you know, just the way that we can, and not only that they're natural, but that we should be encouraged to display them, then we're going to have problems. For example, you know, popular psychology says, you know, if you feel anger, you should express it. Because if you don't express it, you are, quote unquote, suppressing it. And suppression causes all of these psychological issues. So if you feel like smacking her, you should smack her. Because, you know, that's going to keep you free of being challenged by the suppression of this energy. Well, that that might be true in the animal kingdom. But we don't just have these animal influences within us. We have these higher faculties that are to give us other ways of resolving our problems, other ways of making decisions about the opportunities or the challenges that we face in any and all given situations. So to say that we should be encouraged to express our emotions is keeping us locked into the animal, the lower part of our brain in terms of our functional responses, and denying the higher parts of the brain, the parts of the brain that ultimately will enable us to evolve beyond the limitations of the animal and the human behaviors to actually play within our lives. You know, the parts of the brain that will enable us to awaken the higher parts of our spirit, which will enable us to accomplish what our ancestors in the ancient Kemet accomplished, that is, becoming a God man or a God woman on earth, will be dormant if we keep allowing the lower brains, the animal, the limbic, and the human brains, dominant in our behavior. So the course of these 11 laws, the Osir, the Amen law, the Osir law, etc., are there to show us what is the what should we be striving for? What is it that is the highest expression of our experience, or should be the highest expression of our experience on earth? What is it that we should be reaching for? Because, again, your attitude determines your altitude. Who you believe you are, what you believe you can accomplish, is going to determine how high you reach. So if we accept the idea that we're only human, or we're animals, or animals with a little more intellect, or whatever the popular term is, then that's as high as we're going to reach. That's as high as we're going to strive. And so the great potential within us is going to lie dormant because we're not feeding it the energy that it needs to develop. Everything in the world survives on energy. And where we put our energy determines what kind of life there is around it. You know, if we're only feeding the weeds in our garden, then they're going to be the strongest plants around. But if we withdraw our nourishment from the weeds and begin to feed those other plants that we've planted, the ones that are going to awaken our brain and keep us healthy, et cetera, then that's what we're going to get out of life. So our position is our ancestors wrote it in stone, man, know thyself. And what they explained was that God and man are identical beings, that our true identity is one and the same with what we call the Supreme Being. We may not have the magnitude of consciousness that the Supreme Being has, or the magnitude of power that the Supreme Being has, but we have the same quality of knowledge or intellect or wisdom as the Supreme Being, and the same quality of spiritual energy as the Supreme Being. So when they wrote in the books that man was made in the likeness of God, it is a true statement that was extracted from our ancestors in ancient Kemet. And not they didn't just write it, but they also put the system in place so that the people of the society, of the culture, could live a life which would enable them to realize that goal. And there are records of hundreds of people who did, in fact, do just that. There are records, surviving records of hundreds of people who at the end of their life were proclaimed a God man or a God woman. And these weren't just the royalty or the aristocracy or whatever. These were people of all walks of life who at the end of their days were proclaimed by their peers, the people in their communities, to become, have become an Osir man or an Osir woman or a God man or a God woman. And that is the goal that each of us should be aspiring to achieve.
If you could, because there are people who are actually, you know, people come to this planet, people are born, you know, and our ideas oftentimes are primarily shaped by those who raise us, you know, whether that be in the home or the community, you know, or the society. And we live in a society where making a living, you know, going out and, you know, starting, you know, going to school, finding out what your talents are, going to school, graduating from college, and then pursuing a career and making as much money as you can is pretty much, you know, in this society, what we've been taught to do, you know. And along the way, many people have never gained insight into their destiny, to their true destiny, why they were born, you know, what lessons that they were put here to learn. By the way, I'm speaking with Hehi Metaran Kamen, Orwa Hehi Metaran Kamen, Paramount King of the Osir Aset Society. Caller, I see you. If you have a question for my guest or like to make a comment, if you press 1, then that will allow me, 1 on your telephone, that will allow me to see that you have a question and you'd like to be brought into the conversation, and I'll do just that. But again, brother, so many people have been taught that, you know, go to college, get your degree, you know, and go forth, Godspeed. But and thinking that, you know, that, okay, well, I found the answer, this is why I was born. Could you just speak to the reason for life, even for people that are listening? What is the purpose of life? And we're going down the tree of life, by the way. We're talking about the 11 laws of God. We were just doing a recap of Amen. But just for the caller who's just tuned in, what is the reason of life, Brother Orwa? Why are we placed here, and what should be our focus?
Well, each of us comes to earth with the same destiny. That is to become a God-man or a God-woman. But we each have different paths to follow to achieve that destiny. Now, you were talking about the Western model of education where people are taught skills to be applied toward earning a living. We send our children to school, we go to school to get certification so that someone can either provide us with employment or we can start our own employment so that we can pay our way through the world. And that's important. Everyone has to pay their way through the world. But the one thing that is not taught through this system is how to live. We're taught how to make a living, but we're not taught how to live. And what I mean by how to live is how to awaken the divinity that is our true identity. We're not taught how do I awaken or cultivate these 7 parts to my spirit. We're not even taught about the 7 parts of the spirit. You know, if we're lucky, we're taught that there is a spirit. But what it looks like and how it functions, no clue. Not like the physical body. We're taught about the physical body. We're taught about the arms and the fingers and the head and the heart and the brain and the liver. We're taught those kinds of things, and that's important. But The reason why we're not talking about the spirit is because whereas the Western man has put a lot of time and energy into understanding the physical part of the world, he really has not done much in terms of grasping the metaphysical part of the world, or the part of the world that is beyond the physical. You know, the world is composed both a physical and a metaphysical. There's a mental part of the world, and there's a concrete part of the world, a molecular part of the world. And Western mind has focused primarily on the mental part, or the physical part of the world, the molecular part of the world. And the mental part, or the metaphysical part, has gone largely unexplored and uncultivated. Well, our ancestors in Africa, in Kemet, spent their genius cultivating not just knowledge of the physical world, and they left behind some magnificent relics to acknowledge the fact that they were masters of the physical world. But they also mastered the metaphysical world. They mastered the seven divisions of the spirit, whereas the physical represents two parts of the spirit, the molecular and the electromagnetic. There are five mental parts or metaphysical parts of the spirit that just get grouped into a generic term, the mind. Well, we just don't have a mind. We have five different parts to the mind, and each of those different levels gives us a different level of evaluating and processing things in the world. And unfortunately, the Western educational system just touches on the lower two parts of the spirit, the physical and the metaphysical, and not a very good touch on those either, and the lower parts of the mind, believing that this is the total of it. But when in reality, they tell us on one hand that we only use 10% of our brain. So now let's think about that. If we're just using 10% of our brain, what is the rest of the brain for? I mean, what potential is hidden in the 90% that is underdeveloped or not developed? Mm-hmm. Is it just that God just needs some peanuts that to block, to control or protect that 10% of the brain from getting banged around, so the rest of the brain is just like peanuts that you put in packages to protect things? Or does it truly have a function? And our ancestors in Kemet demonstrated that it's not there just as empty space or to hold space, but it's actually a functional, higher functional capability that each of us has, which is the part that enables us to awaken and tap into our true divinity, our true identity, which is the God-man or the God-woman we came to earth to be.
You know, it's interesting, brother, you mentioned the saying that we've been told that we've only tapped into 10% of our brain capability or potentiality. It would seem that in order for that declaration to be validated, that someone would have had to have tapped into the 100% to even be able to say that you're only using 10. You know what I'm saying? Because how could the 10 know the other 90, you know what I'm saying, to be able to make that measurement, to be able to say, oh, we're only using 10%. You know, it seems like a person would have had to tap into the 100 to be able to know the totality of a glass and say, I'm only filling it up 10%. I would have to know the totality of the capacity of the glass to hold whatever the volume it could hold. You know what I mean? So that's interesting that Western man has come up with that. Again, my special guest is Orwa Hehi Metora in Kemet, author of the book African Names, The Ancient Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. He's Paramount King of the Osara Set Society. Again, caller, if you like and have a question for my guest, please press 1, and it will alert me that you'd like to speak with him. We are going through the 11 laws of God. We touched on Amen, the zero sphere on the tree of life. And we're moving now to the first sphere of the tree of life, which is the law of Osir. Brother Orwell, could you talk about the law of Osir? I just want to read the law, if I will, and if you could touch on it. It states that the law of Osir states that your nature is an unconquerable peace. Therefore, nothing and no one in the world can be against you. All experiences come to you to promote your reclamation of peace, that you may in turn acquire wisdom and spiritual power. Orwa?
Yes, well, the law of Osir, as you said, is an evolution of the law of Amen. If our nature is peace, then why are these things in the world, in quotes, are giving me grief? Right? People say, you know, I got to get away so I can find some peace. Well, the reality is that in order for us to achieve the development of anything, it requires a challenge to that thing, to our understanding of that thing. For example, if I want to become a bodybuilder, then I just can't pay my money to Bally's and say, okay, I'm fit now. I actually have to go into the gym, I have to pick up the weights, and I have to apply, you know, energy to the weight, which is resistance. And it's by applying this energy to this resistance, which is the weight, that I become stronger. Well, it's as above, so below. If it is true that I'm a divine being, that's my destiny to become a divine being, to awaken my divinity, if it is true that peace is the only natural response to a challenge in life that I can have or should have, then I have to be given opportunities. I have to have resistance in order to apply my spiritual muscle to develop that muscle to be a reflection of the potential that I have. So it's not just enough for me to say I am a divine being. It has to be demonstrated that I'm a divine being. And the problem is that, unfortunately, we've never been taught, well, what does a divine being look like? You know, a lot of people will get into the idea of, okay, I'm a God man, I got a woman. That's cool. I feel that. But the next step is, what does that look like? How do we measure our achievement of this ideal? How do we mark that we have achieved this particular goal in our life? And that is the result of the challenges that I face, the people that, in quotes, are against me, or the situations, in quotes, oppose me, are nothing more than opportunities for me to exercise my spiritual muscle. So when he says that nothing is against me, that's like you walking into the weight room and you're looking at all these weights and these machines around here and you're saying, oh, well, that treadmill over there is against me. Or this dumbbell over here is against me. Or that stair climber is against me. No, they're there to provide the opportunity for me to get stronger. But I have to take up that challenge. So the person that, in quotes, does me wrong, they're not truly against me, because in reality there's only one consciousness, there's only one God that's expressing itself through all of us and all things. So if there's only one God, then nothing can truly be against me. But the expression the opportunity that this thing represents is giving me the option to express my divinity or not, to live my divinity or not, to apply peace to this situation or not. If I apply peace, then I am functioning as a divine being. If not, then not. And so the way I measure my progress is by marking how I'm able to evolve from through challenge, quote-unquote, challenge to challenge, and maintain peace, because nothing is truly against me.
So what if you have a situation where you might have a sister who's in a relationship, boyfriend or husband cheats on her, and she may find that this is a cycle. You know, she might go through this all the time and wonder, you know, why do I keep attracting the same type of guy? You know, why are guys always unfaithful to me? Or now, will this particular type of challenge continue until she finds the peace or responds a God woman or exercises peace in the situation? And if you could please remember, exercising peace does not mean necessarily that you stay in it, you know what I mean? But in a situation like that, would be the manifestation of her, she could still leave and still be in, and still be not violating the law of Osir, correct?
Correct. It doesn't mean that there are people on one level and circumstances on one level that can violate you, your trust, your person, whatever. We're not saying that if you're in that kind of situation that you need to stay in that situation, because that's not against you. What we're saying is that how I respond to a situation determines the value of that situation. For example, if someone violates me, they take advantage of me, whatever, and I do not cultivate a peaceful response to that situation, meaning I get angry, I worry, I become fearful, I grieve, I hold on to that situation, constantly replaying it in my mind, etc., then the person violated me one time. But now I am violating myself over and over and over again simply because I haven't cultivated peace in response to that situation. And while I'm constantly reliving or holding on or grieving or angry or whatever, not only am I not letting go, I'm not cultivating peace, but I'm harming myself, because the release of these hormones, this cortisol, et cetera, into my system is not just harming me physically, but science has also shown that it also diminishes a person's intellectual capacity. So any situation that I'm in, and I respond with an emotion other than peace, I'm undermining my intellectual ability to evaluate and come up with a good response or a better response to that situation. And at the same time, I'm making myself ill from the non-peace response.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, there are oftentimes we're put in circumstances and situations in life which seem to be repetitive, and on one level they may very well be, simply because we haven't learned the lesson. You know, it's like an old saying, the grass is always. the grass is always greener. It's a classic amen kind of scenario where I'm looking for happiness. And happiness I equate with having something or another. And so I get something, and I'm enjoying this thing. I believe I'm happy because I have this thing. But after a while, because I really didn't have happiness, but I was just experiencing, I was enjoying the thing itself, I see something over across the street, which I want to enjoy because I think that thing over there now is going to give me happiness. So I drop what I have, and I run to that thing across the street believing that that's what's going to make me happy. And after a while, the rose starts chipping off of the grass there, and I see something down the block. And so people are constantly running from thing to thing to thing, believing that happiness is in the thing. No, happiness is not in the thing. Happiness is what I must bring to the thing. So true happiness is understanding that I'm at peace. When I have something, I enjoy it. And when I don't have it, I enjoy the fact that I'm at peace, that I don't have it. So, life is, we come to earth to enjoy the world. We come to earth, God created this world to live through this world and experience and enjoy its creation. And so, we're here to enjoy. But we believe that the joy is in the thing as opposed to joy is what I bring to the thing.
Wow. Now, that's heavy. That's heavy because a lot of times people have grieved for years over the death of someone, enjoyed them while they're here, and wallowed in guilt and sorrow when the person died, or a relationship, you know, happy when the person's here, you know, if the person, you know, leaves or they break up, you know, all of a sudden now the person is, they go through might be months of heartache and even make proclamations and declarations, I'll never love again, even because of it. If you could talk about, brother, oneness, even because that's part of the law of Hosea, is the law of oneness, that, of course, nothing in the world can be against you, and that you are, in essence, one with everything and everybody. Well, we've been taught growing up, you know, in this society that you have good people and you have bad, good people and bad people. And the good people are different from the bad people, you know, and that you want to avoid the bad people, you know, and that you're not one with the bad people, but that you're even might even be on a higher plane than the bad people. Could you talk about oneness and the role that it plays in the Hosea, in the law of Hosea?
Okay, well, on that level, on the Hosea level, everything is one. Everyone is one. There's only one. There's one God. And this one God operates through its creation, this one verse, this universe. And so Hosea operates through what we call the Ba part of the spirit. And the Ba part of the spirit is the part of the spirit through which man is able to experience what it means to be at one with all things. We're able to experience what it means to be a divine being or to be at one with God. Now, there are six other parts of the spirit. And each of these parts of the spirit affords a different level of experience. And on some level, when you get to the physical, the seventh division of the spirit, or the physical part of the spirit, then there is separation that takes place. But it's not separation of our true identity, which is one in itself, same with God, but it's separation of the spirit. there's two parts to being. There's what we call consciousness and spirit. Spirit is material. Consciousness is immaterial, meaning spirit can be divided, can be formed, shaped, segregated, grouped, etc. Consciousness is one. It can never be divided or formed or shaped into anything other than the oneness that it is. So, on the Alsair level, the understanding and the expression is that consciousness is one, but also at that level, spirit is one. Even though there may be different parts, a good analogy is the physical body. We have a physical body which is made up of trillions of different cells. We have different kinds of cells, different systems in the body, different functions, different faculties, different roles. But all of these different parts of the body, though they may be singularly different or separate, are all part of one unit. So even though my finger is different from my arm, in reality, they're a part of one body.
Mm-hmm.
So there are people who are different. All people, in quotes, are different.
Mm-hmm.
Not because we're in essence different, but because of the spiritual organization that we're working through, the bodies that we operate through. So we have the same potential. We have the same destiny. We have the same source, the same makeup. But we come into the world with different paths to follow. We come into the world at different levels in terms of what we cultivate. The life is like school. And just as you don't learn everything in 1 year in school, you don't learn everything in one lifetime either. You go to school, you go to the first grade, there's lessons there to be learned. If you learn those lessons, the next time you come back, you go to the second grade. You go to the second grade, you learn those lessons. If you learn those lessons, the next time you come back, you go to the third grade. But if you don't learn the lessons of the second grade, then the next time you come back, you have to repeat some of those lessons until you master that lesson. Well, the same is true spiritually in terms of our evolution toward awakening and becoming the God-man or the God-woman that we are. We come to Earth with the same faculties, the same capabilities, but we come on different levels because we've accomplished things through different lifetimes. And what we've accomplished in previous lifetimes is going to shape where we come into the world in this lifetime and to help shape the particular paths that we need to follow in this lifetime. So there's no evil people in the world. There are people who are less developed than other people.
Hmm.
Because God doesn't create evil.
Mm-hmm.
We are all created in the same likeness of God. We are just unevolved. You know, if a lion runs down and attacks an antelope and savagely eats it, the lion is not evil. The lion is just functioning on the level of its development. That's how lions, that's the nature of that level of expression. So for people to do things that, in quotes, are referred to as being evil is just a reflection of their spiritual cultivation. Does that mean that we should hang out with such people who are doing these kinds of things? No. But it does mean that there's a need for spiritual training, spiritual education, which in essence is spiritual initiation, processes that move us through the different levels of our development so that we understand this is what a God-man looks like. First, I have to accept the premise that I am a divine being. And once I accept that as my premise, the next thing I need to know is, well, what does that look like? And that's what the 11 laws give us. They give us the guidelines on how we can know where we're functioning in relationship to awakening and cultivating our divinity.
Wow. So let's say, for example, because we talked earlier about the animal and the mammalian brain, the mammalian and the reptilian brain, and how there are people who function on that level. So then until the frontal lobe is opened, if I'm hearing correctly, which governs morality and the higher aspects of divinity, then a person who's operating on that level, they really, truly, at that stage of development, can't help what they're doing any more than the lion that attacks the antelope for survival, the animal or the mammalian and the reptilian brain dealing with survival, the brother who goes out, let's say, and cheats, okay, without thinking of the wife and the kids at home or the girlfriend and the kids at home, would you say that it help it? And therefore, the woman who is, quote, hurt, end quote, you know, who's not exercising peace, or let's say she does exercise peace, in essence, she still won with the brother that violated the sanctity of the relationship, in essence. But that does not mean that she has to remain there, stay there. That's not what you're saying. But she still won with the brother. But are you saying that at his level of development, he can't help it?
I'm not saying that he can't help it. I'm saying he probably has not been given the tools in order to truly grasp what's wrong. You see, there's an old African saying that a child does not inherit a clean behind, meaning that if there's something wrong with a child, then there's supposed to be an adult there to help guide that child, to cultivate that child, to teach that child. And on one level, the society provides that system, that support system, through which each person is cultivated in order to become cultivated to live amongst one another. But if the society isn't teaching people how to become a good husband, how to become a good wife, all it's teaching people is how to make good money, which has no reflection on the spiritual cultivation of the person, then you can't expect people to function on a level to go places where they haven't been shown to go. I mean, it's like if I can't show you what you're supposed to become, how you're supposed to do it, if I can't teach you, because very few people come to Earth with the ability to teach themselves. You know, we all come to the Earth, for the most part, initially with the need to be taught by those who are already here. That's societal's role. That's society's function, to provide the right kind of infrastructure, the right kind of training, the right kind of tools for us to become functional within the society itself. See, in traditional African societies, we had those systems in place. They're called rites of passage. And people went through different rites at different points in time in order to certify that they have now evolved beyond one level of functioning and now can operate on a different level. So when a person reached the ages of puberty or so, and they went through the rites and they were taught, what does it mean to be an adult in this society? What are the skills? What are the behaviors? What are the tools that you must bring to bear? And when they successfully learned those lessons were acknowledged as being an adult, a young adult in their society, then you could expect then that they would function properly. And if they didn't, then they were held accountable because they knew better.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and I say not just knew better, someone just didn't tell them, but they were shown and they were given the skills and the tools to experience and express the behavior on that higher level. But in our society, unfortunately, people are told, don't do this, don't do that. But what the society shows is quite the opposite. I mean, what would a person believe to be the role? Look at marriage in this society. When you figure that, I don't know what the latest statistics are, but I know it's more than 50% of all marriages end up in divorce or separation.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm telling you that marriage is good, but yet and still all marriages are falling apart, or if the government is saying, you know, marriage is sanctity between a man and a woman or whatever, and then you have government officials who are functioning outside their marriage in illicit relationships of any kind or whatever, then what do you expect for the people in the society to do? Because, you know, people, children learn what they see, not what they hear. And so as we are evolving and becoming adults in the society, unfortunately, it's what we see the society being reflected of that we take on as the thing. So if the president is having an illicit affair and he's the president,
mm-hmm.
is something wrong with me having one?
Wow. This is deep. And when you think about it and people, you know, don't take into consideration the fact that what you just said, that people learn by what they see and not necessarily what they hear, and the impact of what it is that they see, you know, and how that affects them. It's amazing. What about people making excuses? And they make excuses for it. You know what I mean? They make excuses for why they did what they did. You know, again, back to the I'm only human, you know, as opposed to, you know, I'm divine. And you talked about last week how what a society would look like if children were taught from birth of their divinity, and, you know, what a society would look like if everybody was taught from birth what, you know, that they were divine and, you know, had that image to aspire to as opposed to the human image. For everybody that's listening, I want to thank you so much for tuning in. My special guest today is Orwahehi Meturan Comet. He's Paramount King of the Osiris Set Society under the direction of Shechem Shechem Ra'u Nefer Amen. I want to recommend a few books. Orwa himself has written a book, and it's called African Names, The Ancient Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. Awesome book. If you've ever considered what names are, even, and what your name means and the role that the name that you're called by and ultimately answer to, what that and how that impacts your life. Also, a book by Ra'un Nefer Amen, Kemetic Success, Achieving Health, Wealth, and Happiness Through the Ageless Teachings of Ancient Egypt. A must read. I'm in the process of reading that now. Also, Ma'at, The 11 Laws of God by Ra'un Nefer Amen. This is discussing, again, the 11 Laws of God, which we are having this discussion today, and we're going through all the 11 laws of the Tree of Life. Excellent book. You've got to get this book. It's a must read. Brother Orwa, are there anything that's going on? Oh, also, let me mention this. Wa'eb, the book on meditation. You got to get that. I just got that, and I'm going through that. Thank you, Akwesi Efnatia. for reminding me of that. Waheb, definitely, that's a must. You have to do it. Brother, would you talk about even the role of meditation? Because there are people who, you know, might wonder, for example, you know, how do you prepare your spirit to even receive these laws?
Well, that's an interesting point. Sheikh Mesheka made a point that, you know, meditation, there are a lot of different systems of meditation out there, a lot of different practitioners of meditation, a lot of different meditation systems and philosophies. But ultimately, meditation is a tool that is designed to aid us in awakening our divinity, in becoming the God-man or the God-woman that we want to be. You hear people sometimes, he has a little joke, he talks where he says, you know, people talk about they've been meditating a long time and they can't make their mind empty, or they're trying to get their mind empty. And, you know, the joke is that if you have an empty mind, you have just that, an empty mind.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need an empty mind. We need a mind that's filled with our divinity, what it looks like to become a divine being.
Mm-hmm.
And so the meditation system that we practice that is in the YF book, that's in the initiation, Madhunatara 4, Volume 4 book, is designed to do just that, to guide us toward putting into our mind these laws and these images of what a divine being looks like, so that as we look in the mirror, we're not just seeing the physical, our physical appearance, we begin to look into and see our spiritual appearance as a reflection of the God that we are made in the image of. So, you know, we talked about, and we mentioned it earlier, but we need to, I think, reinforce this, that we have classes that are started, health classes that started here in Washington, because Washington is the area in which my paramountcy reigns. There's also a paramount king in Philadelphia area, paramount king in England. So, but my area is particularly Washington, D.C. And so we have classes that we're just operate health classes. But we'll also be starting in February the new cycle of initiation. And so, and this is the process that's been missing, is missing from Western culture. We talked earlier about how in traditional Africa there were these systems to guide people through different stages of their life. Well, those are what we call initiation systems, rites of passage, and this is more than an initiation system. So Shechem and Shechem is together an initiation system for those of us who are outside of traditional Africa. When I say outside of traditional Africa, I don't mean traditional Africa meaning the African continent. I mean traditional Africa meaning the practices and the societal protocols of old, because unfortunately most people on the African continent are also outside of traditional Africa, which is why we have people on the African continent who study with us in Ghana and in South Africa, who study our system, who are going through and learning our initiation system and processes, because we have to bring Africa back to Africa, African people, whether it be at home or abroad. And that's one of the missions of the Asarasa Society.
Well, brother, I want to, again, thank you. If you could, you said that there are classes starting up in D.C. now?
Yes, we started this past week of the first week class series, right?
Okay.
It's a five-week series, so it's not too late. They can contact us here in Washington, 202-723-5566. For more information about those classes.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you again, my brother, for coming on and just want to say to the caller again, thank you so much for tuning in. I just want you to know you can get a reading. If you've ever wanted to know your destiny and your life's past, brother, in a brief moment, can you talk about that for a second? Just the purpose of incarnation objective reading and what that is, and because everybody wants to know, why am I here? What did I come to learn? Could you talk about the just off the topic of Osir, but just for the listener who's tuning in?
Yes. Well, as we said earlier, we all have the same destiny to become a divine man or a divine woman. But each of us has our own particular path to follow toward becoming divine, becoming that divinity. Meaning we all have to cultivate these 11 laws within our being. But the challenges that I'm going to face at the Heru stage may be different than the challenges that you face at the Heru stage. And so our destiny reading then gives each of us a specific set of ideas relative to what it is that we need to learn in order to move forward toward the achievement of our destiny. It gives us a particular set of lessons that we need to focus on, challenges that we're going to face. It's like having a road map to help guide us toward where we need to go. There's an old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Well, the destiny reading gives us that path that we know we're going to be following, that we need to address as we go along and how to address it so that we can become successful in becoming the God man or the God woman that we came to earth to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, brother, again, I want to thank you so much for everybody that's listening. If you ever wanted to know why you're here, if you ever wanted to know what is the purpose of life, where am I going, then contact your closest Osera Set Society and get information about how you can schedule to get a reading. Start there. Start understanding, okay, well, there are answers to the questions that you've had. There are other people who have asked the same questions and have gotten answers, okay, and have gotten their life on the track to understanding and consciously seeking and consciously working on becoming that God man or God woman in the earth today. Again, I want to thank you so much, my brother. We're doing this once a month, every first Tuesday. We're going to be talking about another law. Okay, next month is going to be the law of Tahuti, so you don't want to miss that. Again, brother, this information is so valuable, and for all of the lives that touched, and everybody in the D.C. Osara Set Nome, I want to say thank you. I've sat at your feet many days and learned so much from you and all of the other priests and priestesses over there. And again, to everybody that's listening, there are answers to your questions now. Or if you could please just give the number there one more time, because if somebody's out there and they might not know how to get in contact with an Osara Set Society in their area, maybe they can call the number that you give and they can be directed to a number in their city.
Sure. That's 202-723-5566.
Okay. Any closing remarks, my brother?
No, I guess, again, thank you for inviting us on, giving us the opportunity to share with your listeners. We hope that, something that we say or something that we present will be helpful and useful and spark that individual toward each of us moving toward accomplishment of our destiny to become a divine man or a divine woman.
Thank you, my brother. It's a pleasure. I will be in touch. And again, thank you to everybody at the Osara Set DC Nome, and of course, Shechem Ratwun Nefer, Amen. Everybody, make sure that you get the book, okay, that I'm recommending. They are awesome. Ma'at, the 11 Laws of God by Shechem Ratwun Nefer, Amen. Of course, Kemetic Success, by the same author, Ra'un Nefer Amen. And you also want to get, for sure, if you've thought about names and what your name means and, you know, having a name and choosing a name that reflects your destiny and reason for coming into the earth and what you need to work on this life, you definitely have to get African Names by my guest today, Orwa Hehimeturah Nkambe. That's African Names, the African keys to unlocking your power and destiny. Brother Orwa, I will be in touch. Peace and blessings to you, my brother.
Okay, Hetep. And, well, just one last word, just a, kind of a an announcement.
Okay.
You can expect a new book from Shechem or Shechem shortly on our Menab meditation system.
Any idea when that's coming forth?
It should be out before the end of this month.
I look forward to it. Well, I'm definitely going to promote that. Everybody, you heard it first here. Okay, Shechem and Shechem, Ra'un Nefer Amen's got another book coming out, a Menab meditation system, it's called?
That's not the exact title, but it's dealing with Menab meditation, yes.
Okay. Well, I'm going to definitely promote it, and I look forward to it, and we can maybe possibly have him on to talk about it and to discuss it. But everybody, again, look out for that one as well. So you've got several books. That's Comedic Success, Ma'at, The 11 Laws of God, African Names, The Ancient Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny, and The Wa'eb, Healing Your Brain Through Comedic Meditation. Orwa, I'll be in touch, my brother. Thank you so much again. Peace and blessings.
Okay, Hetep. Thank you.
Hetep. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. To all of the listeners, thank you for taking time. You could be doing anything. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to listen to our show today. I want you to make sure that you tune in this Thursday. I'm going to be having Brother Coy Dunstan on. We're talking about holistic health. If you've ever thought about being a vegetarian and what that is and the benefits of that, you want to tune in this Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. I'm going to be having my special guest, Coy Dunstan. He healed his mother of cancer. Sure did. The doctor said that she had like 6 weeks to live. By the time Coy was done with it, this woman lived over 10 years longer and ended up dying of old age. Okay, so don't believe the hype. There is a cure for everything under the sun. So until the next time, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. My name is Jawanza.
And this is Akuya Shasnatea.
It's been a wonderful, wonderful evening. Thank you so much. Peace and blessings, everybody. I love you. Good night.